欢迎各位听众回到 2CR 澳洲中文广播电台。接下来我们将会播放与澳洲联邦参议员 Dave Sharma 的访问录音。
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to 2CR Radio. I'm Sally, your host today. It's our honor to having Senator Dave Sharma with here today. Senator Dave Sharma is the Senator for New South Wales, Shadow Assistant Minister for the Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs, as well as the Shadow Assistant Minister for the International Development and the Indo-Pacific. So, welcome you, Dave.
Thank you, Sally. It's our pleasure to have you.
大家下午好，欢迎收听 2CR 澳洲中文广播电台，我是今天的主持人 Sally。今天我们非常荣幸邀请到了 Dave Sharma 参议员来到我们的节目。Dave Sharma 参议员是代表新南威尔士州的澳洲联邦参议员，同时也是影子公民及多元文化事务助理部长，以及影子国际发展与印太事务助理部长。Dave, 您好，欢迎来到节目，非常高兴今天能够访问您。
Thank you for having me on, Sally.
谢谢你的邀请, Sally.
Yes, so as this is your first time joining us on the 2CR Radio, could you please start by introduce yourself for a listener who may not familiar with you yet?
好的，这是您第一次来到 2CR 澳洲中文广播电台，可否先为还不太熟悉您的听众简单的介绍一下您自己？
Yes, my name is Dave Sharma. I'm a senator for the Liberal Party in the federal parliament, the parliament that sits in Canberra. I represent New South Wales, the state of New South Wales. I wasn't born here. I was born in Canada, but my family migrated here when I was about 4 years old. I grew up in Sydney, and for my time before politics, I was a diplomat that represented Australia in Washington, D.C., in Papua New Guinea, and in Israel.
好的，我叫 Dave Sharma， 是自由党在澳洲联邦议会的参议员，也就是位于坎培拉的联邦议会。我代表新南威尔士州。我并不是在澳洲出生的，我出生于加拿大，但在我大约4岁的时候，我的家人移民来到了澳洲，所以我是在悉尼长大的。在从政之前呢，我是一名外交官，曾代表澳洲在华盛顿、巴布亚新几内亚以及以色列工作。
Mm-hmm. So we know that you got an distinguished academic background before, achieving a top HSC result and then graduating from Cambridge Law School with a first class honours. And then we know that you later spent a lot of year in Australia's diplomatic service, which in the embassy. Can you tell us more about your experience working in the foreign affairs across different countries, which you mentioned in the Washington, D.C. and the Papua
我们知道您在从政之前呢，有非常出色的学术背景。您曾在 HSC 高考中取得优异的成绩，之后呢，又以一等荣誉成绩毕业于剑桥大学法学院。我们也知道您后来在澳洲的外交系统工作多年，包括了在大使馆任职。可否请您和我们分享一下您在外交事务领域以及刚才您提到的华盛顿和巴布亚新内几亚等不同地方的工作经验呢？
Yes.
In Papua New Guinea, yes.
Yes.
yes, of course. So I joined our Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade soon after I finished university. So I joined as a university graduate. Mm-hmm. I was about 23 years old at the time. It wasn't necessarily what I thought I'd do. You know, going through high school, I went to school at a public school on the North Shore of Sydney. And I thought I would probably do medicine or law, and I got, you know, high marks and a good TR. But I had an offer to go to Cambridge University and study there, so I thought, well, that's a good opportunity, and I'll come back to Australia. So I went over there and I started studying science, actually, but I changed to law after my first year. And then I came back to Australia and I actually started to do medicine. I was doing graduate medicine at the University of Sydney. And it was whilst I was doing medicine in my first year that I thought, yeah, I enjoyed it, but I wasn't sure I wanted to be a doctor and in the hospital, and it didn't really excite my passions. And I just saw that there was the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade was advertising for graduate intake. And mm-hmm. I'm not from a diplomatic family. I've never had any family members who've worked in the federal public service or in diplomacy before. So I just applied more on the spur of the moment, mm-hmm. thinking, oh, I'll see how this goes. And I you know, I had to go and, I think, sit a written exam and do an IQ test and do a psychological test and do a group activity and then a group interview and then other interviews. And, you know, I just kept going further and further, and eventually I ended up getting an offer. And I thought, okay, I'll try this. This could be interesting. I'll see if I like it. So I deferred my studies in medicine, moved to Canberra, joined the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, and I did really enjoy it. I spent the next almost 20 years there, representing Australia in Papua New Guinea, in Washington, D.C., and in Israel. But I also, you know, represented Australia, you know, in many other roles and places on short-term visits and short-term missions as well. So it gave me a good understanding of Australia, our place in the world, the importance of our relations with other countries, the importance of trade to Australia's prosperity, and also some of the dangers and risks that Australia faces. It was a fascinating job. It's always a privilege to represent your country abroad, and that was a great honour for me to be an ambassador for Australia. But I thought, after I finished as ambassador to Israel, I felt like I wanted to contribute to Australia in a different way. And that was really why I got into politics.
当然可以，我是在大学毕业后不久加入了澳洲的外交贸易部的。当时呢是以大学毕业生的身份加入，那时候我大约23岁，这其实不是我一直以来原本以为自己会做的事情。你知道我在高中时期呢，我就读于悉尼北岸的一所公立学校，当时呢我以为自己将来大概会读医学或法律，我的成绩很好，也取到了很高的分数，但后来呢，我获得了剑桥大学的录取通知，可以去那里读书，所以我想这也是一个很好的机会。我之后再回到了澳洲，于是我去了剑桥。一开始呢，其实读的是科学，但在第一年之后呢，我转到了法律专业。之后呢，我再回到了澳洲，又开始读了医学。当时呢，我在悉尼大学攻读研究生的医学课程。就在我就读医学第一年的时候，我觉得自己虽然喜欢它，但并不确定自己是否会想要在医院里成为一名医生。这件事并没有真正的激发我的热情。后来我刚好看到了澳洲的外交贸易部正在招聘毕业生，开放毕业生的项目申请。我并不是来自外交世家，我的家人里从来没有人在联邦公务系统或外交领域工作过，所以我当时更多是临时起意去申请，想着看看会怎么样。之后呢，我需要参加笔试，我想还有智力的测验、心理测验、小组的活动，然后是小组面试以及其他的面试。就这样，我一关一关的往前走，最后获得了录取。当时我想，好吧，那我就试一试，这可能会很有意思。我看看自己是否喜欢，于是我暂停了医学的学业，搬到了坎培拉，加入了澳洲外交贸易部，而我也确实非常喜欢这一份工作。那接下来，我在那里工作了接近20年，代表澳洲派驻巴布亚新内吉亚、华盛顿以及以色列。不过除此之外呢，我也有许多其他的身份，在不同的地方参与短期的访问和短期任务，代表澳洲工作。所以这段经历呢，让我对澳洲、澳洲在世界中的位置、澳洲与其他国家关系的重要性、贸易对澳洲繁荣的重要性，以及澳洲所面临的一些危险和风险都有很好的了解。那是一份非常令人着迷的工作，能够在海外代表自己的国家始终是一份荣誉，而能够担任澳洲大使呢，对于我来说也是一项很大的荣誉。但在我结束澳洲驻以色列大使任期之后呢，我觉得自己希望以另外一种方式继续的为澳洲做出贡献，而这其实也是我后来进入政界的原因。
Yes, and we know that you have also involved in a peace action before.
是的，我们也知道您之前参加过和平活动。
That's right, yeah. Yes, I was what's called a civilian peacekeeper or peace monitor in Bougainville, which was a province of Papua New Guinea, which had a terrible civil war from about 1988 to about 1998, 10-year civil war that killed thousands of people. And it was brought to an end by initially a sort of a ceasefire agreement, a truce agreement that involved the deployment of an international peacekeeping force, effectively. Mm-hmm. And that peacekeeping force consisted of Australians, New Zealanders, Fijians, Niue Vanuatu and Solomon Islanders. And I was, about a year after I joined the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, I was sent over as a civilian. It's a military operation, but I was a civilian really doing political and diplomatic work. So, but I had to deploy with the army, which means, you know, I lived in army quarters. I ate army food. I slept on a stretcher bed. I had to learn how to, like, drive a four-wheel drive off a landing craft onto a beach, how to repair a tire, you know, all these sorts of things, how to sleep rough, how to camp, all those sorts of things, which was a great experience. I mean, it was a lot of fun. And I got to know the Bougainvillean people well and their senior politicians very well. And towards the end of my time in Papua New Guinea, we Australia helped bring that civil war to a final close with signing of what was called the Bougainville Peace Agreement, which basically brought an end to the civil war, provided for Bougainville to have a high degree of autonomy or independence within Papua New Guinea, and then to eventually have a referendum on independence. And being involved in that, putting an end to one of the worst conflicts in our region, was, you know, a real very enjoyable and worthwhile thing to do. Mm-hmm.
是的，没错，我当时担任的是所谓的民事维和人员，或者可以称之为和平监察员。那地点呢是在布甘维尔。那布甘维尔呢是巴布亚新几内亚的一个省份，当地呢从大约1988年到1998年经历了一场非常严重的内战，持续了十年，造成了数千人死亡。这场战争最初的是通过一种停火的协议、休战的协议而逐步的结束的。那当时呢是一支国际维和的力量，那这支维和力量呢就包括了澳洲人、新西兰人、斐济人、瓦努阿图人以及所罗门群岛人。我是在加入澳洲外交贸易部大约一年之后呢，被派往了当地，以民事人员的身份参与了工作。那是一项军事行动，但我本身呢是民事人员，主要呢是在做政治和外交方面的工作。那不过呢，我需要跟随军队部署，那这也意味着我住在了军营里面，吃军队的食物，睡在担架床上。还需要学习如何摆四驱车从登陆艇开到海滩上，如何修补轮胎，如何在简陋的环境中睡觉，如何露营等等。那是一段非常宝贵的经历，也非常有意思。我也因此非常熟悉布甘维尔人民，那以及和当地的高层政治人物。在我与巴布亚新几内亚工作接近尾声时，澳洲协助推动了签署了所谓的巴布维尔和平协议，这基本上结束了内战，并安排了布甘维尔未来举行的独立公投能够与参与在其中，协助结束我们地区其中一场最严重的冲突，对于我来说是非常有意义的，也非常值得，也令人感到很有成就感的事情。
This sounds like a really dangerous but exciting experience for you as well. So, after nearly two decades in the diplomacy services, what motivates you to transition into the politics later in your career, which we assume as a late entry in as a politician?
听起来对于您来说，这是一段既危险又令人兴奋的经历。那么，在近20年的外交服务之后呢，又是什么促使您在职业生涯后期转入了政界？我们或许可以说是您算是比较晚才进入政治领域的。
Yeah, so look, firstly, I have a big belief that most politicians should be late entries. I don't think we're well served by people who make politics their career. I think we want people who come to politics from outside politics, because we want people to come to politics who bring some level of expertise from outside. So whether they're a doctor, a teacher, a lawyer, a nurse, a builder, an engineer, a mechanic, an accountant. The best politicians I've seen in Canberra are people who have experience from a career outside, and they can bring that expertise to bear and you can learn from them. We do, unfortunately, have, I think, more career politicians than we should, people who've only ever done politics and know politics and study politics. And I think that's unfortunate, because for them, politics is politics should never be an end in itself. Politics is meant to be a means to an end. It's the means by which you change the country or improve the country. But if politics is your only vocation, your only career, then your goal is just survival, right? Prosperity within that career, which means you're not necessarily in it for the right reasons. So, yes, I came to it later than some people, but to my mind, it's when people should be approaching politics, usually after 1 to 2 decades of another career. And for me, it was really about serving Australia in another way. So I'd served Australia for 2 years as a diplomat. I'd seen the strengths and the weaknesses of our country. I'd seen some things I think need fixing or addressing, or some risks that we are not dealing with properly in Australia or we're not conscious of. And so I thought the best way I can help strengthen Australia and further Australia and further the opportunities in Australia is by getting involved in elected politics. And so that's how it came about.
是的，首先我非常相信大多数的政治人物都应该是在职业生涯后期才进入政界的。我并不认为如果一个人一开始就把政治当成自己的职业，这对于我们的社会是最好的。我认为我们需要的是从政治以外的领域进入政治的人，因为我们希望进入政界的人能够带来其他行业和领域的专业经验。无论他们原本是医生、教师、律师、护士、建筑工人、工程师、技师，甚至是说会计师，我在堪培拉见过最优秀的政治人物，往往都是在政治以外有职业经验的人。他们能够把这些专业的经验带入政治，也让其他人能够从他们身上学习。但很遗憾的是，我认为我们目前确实有太多的职业政治人物，也就是那些一生中只做过政治、只熟悉政治、只研究政治的人。我认为这是比较可惜的，因为对他们来说，政治本身可能就是变成了一种目的，但政治本身不应该成为目的。政治应该是达成某种目标的手段，是你改变国家、改善国家的方式。如果政治是成为你唯一的职业或唯一的事业，那么你的目标就会变成了在这个职业里生存下去，以及在这个职业中发展。这也意味着你未必会是出于政确的原因进入政治。所以是的，我确实比一些人更晚于进入政界，但在我看来，这其实正是人们应该进入政治的时间点。通常呢，是在其他职业中工作了1到20年之后。对于我而言，这其实是希望以另外一种形式来服务澳洲。那我已经以外交官的身份服务澳洲20年，我看到了澳洲的优势，也看到了澳洲的弱势，我看到了一些认为需要修正或处理的问题，也看到了一些澳洲没有妥善应对，甚至没有充分意识到的风险。所以我认为，如果我要帮助澳洲变得更加强大，推动澳洲向前的发展，并为澳洲创造更多的机会，最好的方式呢，就是参与选举政治，这也就是我进入政界的原因。
Mm-hmm. So what's the reason for you to pursue your politics through choosing as a liberal party after many years in the diplomacy?
在多年外交工作之后呢，您选择了自由党进入政治，其背后的原因是什么呢？
Yes, so firstly, as a diplomat, I was non-political because our public service in Australia is apolitical or non-political. You know, and I worked for governments of both sides. In fact, I was appointed as ambassador to Israel by a Labor government. Mm-hmm. I worked quite closely with a Labor government for about half my time as a diplomat and about half my time for a coalition government. But I guess when I left politics, I always knew that, look, that liberal values are ones that I think are better for Australia. I think those are the encouragement of aspiration and ambition, providing opportunity for everyone, making sure that small business and enterprise and individuals have an opportunity to grow something and build something and get ahead. And importantly, a country where people's freedoms as individuals and their distinct identity as an individual is respected. And that's really at the heart of, I think, liberalism is about seeing society as being built up from individuals and on the basis of individual rights and not trying to typecast or pigeonhole individuals based on their ethnicity or their profession or their religion or their social class, saying everyone's of equal worth and equal dignity and everyone is worthy of equal opportunities. And I think at its best, Australia encapsulates those liberal ideas, but it's always a struggle to maintain them. So for me, the Liberal Party was my natural home. I have, you know, respect for my colleagues in Parliament who have a different view, you know, Labor and others. But for me, I think the Liberal vision for Australia is the one that has shown to be the most successful and the most enduring, and offers the most hope for resolving Australia's challenges and problems today.
是的，首先作为一名外交官，我是非政治性的，因为澳洲的公务系统是非党派、非政治性的。我曾为两大阵营的政府工作，事实上我是由工党政府任命为澳洲驻以色列大使的。在我的外交生涯中，大约一半时间是与工党政府密切合作，另外一半时间是与联盟党政府合作。但我想，当我离开外交界时，我一直很清楚，自由党所代表的价值观 是我们认为对澳洲更有利的价值观。我认为这些价值包括鼓励人们有抱负、有志向，向每个人提供机会，确保小企业、企业以及个人都有机会发展、创造、建立自己的事业，并向前迈进。更重要的是，这关乎建立一个尊重个人自由，也尊重每个人独特身份的国家。我认为这正是自由主义的核心。自由主义认为呢，社会是由个人组成的，而且应该建立在个人权利的基础之上，而不是根据一个人的族裔、职业、宗教或社会阶层把人简单的分类或贴上标签。他强调的是每个人都有同等的价值和同等的尊严，每个人都应该获得平等的机会。那我认为在最好的状态下呢，澳洲正体现了这些自由主义的理念，但要维持这些理念呢，始终需要努力。所以对于我而言，自由党呢是我自然的政治归属。我尊重议会中持有不同的观点的同事，那包括工党和其他政党的人士。但对于我来说，我认为自由党对澳洲的愿景是被证明的最成功也是最持久的愿景，也最有希望帮助澳洲应对今天所面临的挑战和问题。
Mm-hmm, I see. So in the recent years, we see that there's lots of international conflicts has increasingly affected the community relations here in Australia. So from your perspective, how can Australia maintain the social cohesion while also protecting the national security and the community trust?
近年来呢，我们也看到了很多国际冲突越来越影响到了澳洲本地的社区关系。那么从您的角度来看呢，澳洲应该如何在维持社会凝聚力的同时，也保护国家安全和社区信任呢？
Look, that is a real challenge because, you know, Australia is almost, we're quite unique in the number of different communities we host here in Australia. You know, most countries around the world overwhelmingly are homogenous in terms of their, you know, ethnic and racial and religious makeup. Australia is quite unique in that we have people and have welcomed people from different religions, different faiths, different cultures, different ethnicities and different value systems as well. And so to ensure that all these people from wholly different, you know, parts of the world live harmoniously, you can't just rely upon that to happen by chance. You have to work it and you have to nurture that. And I think an important principle that has been neglected in recent years is that whilst we allow, you know, we allow and welcome and respect people maintaining their identity, you know, that they're from a country, you know, maintaining their cultural and linguistic and ethnic and religious identity, we don't allow them and we don't permit them to import some of the historical grievances that might come with that identity and the historical animosities. And, you know, that hasn't always been easy. I mean, there have been tensions in Australia throughout our history between different groups. I mean, you know, 60 years ago, it was between Catholics and Protestants in Australia, different religious groups, sort of same ethnicity. But we've also had, we took a lot of people from the former Yugoslavia in the 1990s who've just had been in a terrible civil war and, you know, they were at each other's throats. We've got people who are, you know, Greeks and Turks who've historically over the last 100 years had a difficult relationship. you know, we've got ethnically Japanese people here and ethnically Chinese, and Japan and China have a historically difficult relationship, as does Korea with Japan. But we've managed to function harmoniously because we've said, once you come to Australia, you need to leave those differences aside. And it doesn't mean you need to discard who you are, but it means that you accept everyone else in Australia as your equal, the equal of the same rights and the same protections and the same freedoms, regardless of what your parents or grandparents might have said back in the home country. And I think we have lost a bit of sight of that in recent years. And I think, you know, where I've noticed it most obviously is with growing intolerance and discrimination against Australia's Jewish community, because they've been identified with Israel during the recent conflicts in the Middle East, and because people have basically sought to make them responsible for the conduct of Israel in these wars, the conduct that they have not agreed with. And I think that has crossed a Rubicon in Australia. That has been a breach of our social compact, if you like. Just as we would not, you know, we would never seek to hold the people from another country responsible for the actions of those countries. Once they've moved to Australia, we say, you're Australian. You know, we don't hold you accountable for whatever's going on in your country. You're not part of the government there. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, the last few years, we've allowed that to happen to Jewish people. And I think that's been at the expense of our social cohesion. And it's ended very tragically, of course, with a terrorist attack in Bondi, which, you know, was the worst ever terrorist attack in Australia's history, you know, in modern Australian history in 230 years.
这确实是一个很大的挑战，因为澳洲在接纳不同社群方面是相当独特的。世界上有太多数的国家在族裔、种族和宗教构成上往往是相对的同质化，但澳洲是非常独特的，因为我们接纳并欢迎来自不同宗教、不同信仰、不同文化、不同族裔以及不同价值体系的人。因此呢，要确保这些来自世界各地背景完全不同的人能够和谐共处，我们不能只是依赖它自然的发生，我们必须主动的努力，也必须去培养这些和谐。那我认为呢，近年来有一个重要的原则被忽略了，那就是虽然我们允许欢迎并尊重人们保留自己的身份，也比如他们来自某个国家，保留自己的文化、语言、族裔和宗教身份，但我们不允许，也不应该允许他们把这些身份相关的历史恩怨和历史的敌意带入澳洲。这一点一直都是不容易做到的。澳洲历史上呢，不同族群体之间呢，也一直存在过紧张的关系。那么，例如呢，在60年前呢，澳洲曾有天主教徒和新教徒之间的紧张关系。那他们大致属于同一种裔，但宗教不同。我们在90年代呢，也接受了来自许多是从南斯拉夫的人，他们刚刚经历了惨烈的内战，彼此之间呢曾经冲突激烈，我们也有希腊裔和土耳其裔人士，而两者呢，在过去100年的历史关系中也是相当的复杂的。我们也有日裔的澳洲人，也有华裔的澳洲人，而日本和中国的在历史上也有复杂的关系，那韩国与日本之间也如此。但我们之所以能够大致和谐的运作，是因为我们一直在强调，一旦你来到澳洲，就需要把这些历史分歧放在一旁，这并不代表你需要放弃自己的身份，而是意味着你要接受澳洲其他所有人都是你平等的同胞，享有同样的权利、同样的保护和同样的自由。不论你的父母和或祖父母在原来的国家曾经有过什么看法，我认为近年来我们在某种程度上有些忽视了这一点。而我最明显看到的就是在针对澳洲犹太社群的不宽容和歧视正在增加。因为呢，在最近的中东的冲突期间呢，他们被与以色列联系到了一起，也因为有些人基本上试图让他们为以色列在战争中的行为负责。那即使呢，这些行为呢，并不是他们同意或决定的。那我认为呢，这在澳洲呢已经是越过了一条界限了。如果可以这样说，这已经违反了我们的社会契约，就像我们从来不会在来自其他国家的人移民到澳洲之后，因为他们的原籍国政府的行为而追究他们个人的责任。 我们会说你是澳洲人。我们不会因为你的原籍国正在发生什么事情而要求你去承担责任。你并不是那个国家的政府成员，但不知为何在过去的几年内，我们却让这种事情发生在了犹太人身上。我认为这是以牺牲澳洲社会凝聚力为代价的，而这最终呢也是非常悲剧性的，以绷带的恐怖袭击告终。那这是澳洲历史上呢230年以来最恐怖的恐怖袭击。
Yes, so with what you mentioned about with the Bondi attack, we know that there's raising concerns around those different kinds of anti-Semitism as well as racism and broader concerns on social division. What do you think is the role of federal government can they play to ensure the multicultural communities feel safer and respect and include in Australia?
是的，就您刚才提到的邦代袭击事件而言呢，我们知道现在社会上对不同形式的反犹主义、种族主义以及更广泛的社会分裂都是越来越多的担忧。您认为联邦政府呢可以扮演什么样的角色，确保多元文化社群在澳洲感到更安全、更受尊重，也更有归属感呢？
Well, I think the federal government and all levels of governmentneed to take a stronger position in cracking down on and condemning and criminalising conduct that is racist or, you know, basically persecuting people on the basis of their race. Now, whether that's directed at Jewish people, anti-Semitism, or whether it's directed at Muslim people, Islamophobia, or whether it's directed at Chinese people, or, you know, whatever else, we should never allow that to happen. We should never say... Well, that's okay. That's just free expression. Because if we do, then I think we are tearing at the very threads of what holds Australia together. We are saying that, well, some Australians are fair game or some Australians are worthy of less protection than other Australians. And I think for too long in the lead up to that Bondi terrorist attack, some of our political leaders and some of those in power turned a blind eye. Or just sort of dismissed what was going on, you know, whether it was Jewish synagogues, places of worship being firebombed or property being vandalised or businesses being graffitied or people being doxed or boycotted or harassed or intimidated. I think people said, oh, well, look, people, you know, too many politicians and law enforcement and police sort of turned a blind eye to that. And as a result, it was able to build up a head of steam. So I don't think Australia can afford to have a casual or laid-back attitude to these things, because what's at stake is really our cohesion as a nation, our identity as a nation, as a place where people of different faiths and different backgrounds can live harmoniously.
我认为联邦政府以及各级政府都需要采取更强硬的立场，打击、谴责并将种族主义行为或者是基于种族迫害他人的行为形式化。无论这种行为是针对犹太人的反犹主义，还是针对穆斯林的伊斯兰恐惧症，或者是针对华人的歧视，又或者是针对其他任何的群组，我们都不应该允许这样的事情发生。我们不应该说这没关系，这只是言论自由，因为我们如果这么做，我认为我们就是在撕裂维持澳洲社会的根本纽带。我们等于是在说有些澳洲人可以被任意的攻击，或者有些澳洲人比其他澳洲人更不值得受到保护。我认为在邦代的恐怖袭击案发生之前呢，有相当长的一段时间，一些政治领袖和掌权者对正在发生的事情视而不见，或者轻描淡写。无论是犹太教堂和宗教场所被纵火袭击，财产被破坏，商家被涂鸦，还是个人被人肉搜索、抵制、骚扰或恐吓，我认为大多数的政治人物、执法机构和警方都对此睁一只眼闭一只眼。结果呢，这些问题呢，逐渐累积并升级，所以我认为澳洲不能以随意或松懈的态度对待这些问题，因为真正受到威胁的是我们作为一个国家的凝聚力，是我们作为一个让不同信仰、不同背景的人和谐共处的国家身份。
Mm-hmm. So how do you think we can draw the line among the freedom of speech and with those kind of you define as criminal? Because when we saying about like respecting, we also respecting the freedom of speech in different kind of ethnic community group.
您认为我们应该如何划分言论自由以及您所说的那些可能构成犯罪的行为之间的界限呢？因为当我们谈到尊重时，我们同时也尊重不同的群体社群中的言论自由。
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, I don't necessarily pretend that is easy, but I think it's one thing to express your political opinion. It's another to seek to punish or infringe upon the rights of others because of your political opinion, and that's what we saw too much of. So I don't have a problem with people expressing their views on the conflict in the Middle East, but I do have a problem with Jewish school children getting harassed or bullied or intimidated or yelled at, as happened, you know, at netball court in Maroubra just a few weeks ago because of something in the Middle East. That's impinging upon other people's rights and freedoms. And I think we need to be very clear that freedom of speech cannot be allowed to be exercised at the expense of other people's rights and freedoms, whether they are the right to live in security and safety, the right to play netball on a weekend with your kids' team, the right to practice your faith, the right to wear religious insignia, you know. I don't think that should be a difficult thing. I mean, I don't think we should be allowing, protests that basically shut Sydney's CBD every weekend for, I don't know, 80 weeks running. Like, I think that's impinging upon the rights of business owners, the rights of regular shoppers. I don't think that should happen. You know, I don't think we should have a situation where on, 2 days after the 7th of October terrorist attack by Hamas in Israel, on a day when the opera house is being lit up to commemorate the victims of that attack, Jews are told to stay home because of the expected violence and intimidation of a protest against Israel. I mean, I think that's getting, those are examples, not just some, of when the balance between free speech and the freedoms and rights of others have been grossly mismanaged.
是的，我不会假装这是一件很容易的事情，但我认为表达自己的政治意见是一回事，而因为自己的政治立场试图惩罚他人或侵犯他人的权利则是另一回事。而我们看到太多的这是后一种的情况，所以呢，我并不反对人们表达他们对中东的冲突的一些看法，但我不能接受犹太学生因为中东发生的事情而被骚扰、欺凌、恐吓或辱骂，就像是前几周前在 Marondot 的一个无板篮球场发生的情况一样，这已经侵犯了他人的权利和自由。我认为我们需要非常清楚地表明，言论自由不能以牺牲他人的权利和自由为代价。无论是他们安全生活的权利，周末与孩子球队一起打无板篮球的权利，实践自己信仰的权利，还是佩戴宗教标志的权利，都应该受到保护。我不认为这一点是很难理解的。我也不认为我们应该是允许某些示威活动几乎每个周末都瘫痪悉尼的 CBD， 并且持续了大概80周。我认为这些侵犯了商家和普通购物者的权利。我不认为这种情况应该发生。我也不认为我们应该出现这样子的情况。在哈马斯与以色列发动10月7日恐怖袭击后的两天，悉尼歌剧院点灯纪念受害者，但犹太人却被告知最好待在家里，因为外界预期反以色列示威可能会带来暴力和恐吓。我认为这些是言论自由与他人自由和权利之间的平衡被严重处理不当的例子。
So meanwhile, at the same time, when Australia is facing growing debates among the migrations, housing pressure and social changes, alongside with the shifting voter support from the two independents to parties such as One Nation, how should the Liberal Party should respond in a way that reconnects with different communities while still maintaining Australia's multicultural successful story?
与此同时呢，澳洲正面临围绕移民、住房压力和社会变化的越来越多的讨论。选民支持呢，也出现了从两大主要政党转向一国党等政党的情况。您认为自由党应该如何的回应，才能重新与不同的社群建立连接，同时维持澳洲多元文化的成功故事呢？
Look, that's a challenge for us as Liberals. I think it's a challenge for all major political parties because, you know, we in Western democracies more broadly, we're seeing a sort of a fragmentation, if you like, of the political system. People are increasingly wanting to vote for what we would have called traditionally minor parties and whatnot. But I think, you know, our value proposition as Liberals has to be that we can govern the country in a way that is better for the country overall. Now, governing a country, you know, you don't get the luxury of being ideologically pure. When you govern a country, you need to be pragmatic, you need to compromise, you need to recognise their different interests. You need to recognise that you're there to govern for everyone, for the benefit of all Australians. And I think my criticism, if you like, of some of these minor parties is, firstly, they do not acknowledge or recognise that there are inevitable trade-offs in government. And secondly, that they don't actually seek to lay forward a vision for Australia that would be better for all Australians. They just seek to say, this is the vision that our supporters want to see. Politics is ultimately about compromise, and whoever's lucky enough to form government, you can't just govern for your own people or your own supporters or your voters that put you there. You're there as a trustee for the entirety of Australia. So I think our challenge as Liberals is to make clear that, firstly, we would govern for all Australians, but secondly, we would govern in a way that would make life better for all Australians.
这对我们自由党来说是一个挑战，我认为对所有的主要政党来说都是一个挑战，因为在更广泛的西方民主国家中，我们都看到的是自由体系出现了某种的碎片化，越来越多的选民希望投票给传统上被称为小党的政党。但我认为作为自由党，我们必须向选民清楚地表明，我们能够以一种对整个国家更有利的方式去治理澳洲。治理一个国家时，你没有去奢侈空间去追求完全的意识形态纯粹，你需要务实，需要妥协，需要承认不同群体有不同的利益。你也需要明白你的职责是为所有人治理国家，为所有澳洲人的利益服务。我对一些小党的批评是，首先他们并不认识，并不承认到政府治理中必须存在的取舍。其次，他们实际上并没有提出一个能够让所有澳洲人都受益的澳洲愿景。他们只是说，这是我们支持者所希望看到的愿景。政治最归根到底呢，是关于妥协。无论哪一方有幸组成政府，都不能只以自己人、自己的支持者或投票的人给自己的人指正，你是在为整个澳洲去承担受托的责任。所以我认为自由党面临的挑战是要说明清楚，那第一，我们是为了所有澳洲人执政，第二，我们会以让所有澳洲人生活变得更好的方式来治理国家。
Mm-hmm. So in terms of what happened in the Victoria, do you think that similar cooperation of the coalition will happen in New South Wales as well?
就维州目前发生的情况而言，您认为类似的联盟合作呢，是否也会在新南威尔士州出现呢？
Cooperation, the coalition.
你是指联盟党与异国党的合作吗？
The One Nation Party?
是的。
Look, I think in New South Wales and everywhere, I mean, look, you know,politics is ultimately about cooperation, right? Even though there are different teams and different parties. So, you know, we will always cooperate with the Labor Party on legislation that we agree with in the Parliament, right? Sometimes we cooperate with the Greens. Sometimes we cooperate with One Nation. Sometimes we cooperate with the Teals. If we share the objectives or we share an analysis of what's right, yes, we'll cooperate with them. But by the same token, if we think their prescription or what they're doing or proposing is wrong, well, no, we won't cooperate with them. I mean, our objective at the next state election in New South Wales and then the federal election, which is some 2 years away, you know, will be to govern with our own right. Now, you know, we want to win as many votes as possible. And ideally that we want them to be first preference votes, primary votes. But if people want to vote for someone else and put us second, well, we'll take that as well. You know, we want to be the choice for a majority of Australians. And, you know, to the extent we can make our appeal as broad as possible, that's what our objective is.
我认为 为在新南威尔士州以及其他地方，政治归根到底呢，都是关于合作。即使有不同的团队或不同的政党，我们也会在议会中就我们同意的立法与工党合作。有时候呢，我们也会与绿党合作，有时候我们也会与一国党合作，有时候呢，我们也会与 TUS 独立议员合作。那我们如果有共同的目标，或者是对什么是正确的事情有共同的判断，那我们就会与他们合作。但同样的是，如果我们认为他们提出的方法、正在做的事情或是建议是错误的，那么我们就不会与他们合作。我们在下一次新州州选以及大约两年后的联邦选举中的目标是凭自己的力量赢得执政。我们希望呢赢得尽可能多的选票。理想的情况下呢，我们希望把这些票的第一偏好票，也就是基本票。但如果呢选民想要把票投给其他人，再把我们排在第二位，我们也会接受。我们希望成为大多数澳洲人的选择，而我们的目标呢，也是尽可能的扩大我们的吸引力。
Mm-hmm. Understand. So turning into your portfolio of Indo-Pacific, as a competition between the United States and China intensify, how should Australia position itself in the region while balancing the security partnerships such as the AUKUS with its important economic relationship with China?
明白。接下来呢，谈到您的印太的事务职责。随着美国与中国之间的竞争加剧，澳洲应如何在本地的区域定位自己，同时平和 AUKUS 等安全伙伴的关系，以及与中国之间重要的经济关系呢？
So look, I mean, you've just summarized there the challenge for Australian diplomacy, basically. It's firstly not to make a choice. We shouldn't see this as a binary thing. We don't need to pick a side. And in truth, you know, Australia's interests are best served by a US-China relationship that is cooperative, where tensions are limited, where we recognise that there are obvious differences. But the truth is that, you know, China is a major power in our region, our neighbourhood. It's not going anywhere. The United States is a major global power and will be so for the foreseeable future. And it's present in the Western Pacific, in our neighbourhood as well. It's not going anywhere. It's our interest to make sure that those two countries get along. And for Australia, you know, our security relationship is obviously very close with the United States. I don't think see that changing, but we have a mutually beneficial economic and trading relationship with China. And, you know, neither of us have an interest in harming or hurting that. We've also got, you know, good relations with Japan and with Korea and with Indonesia and, you know, trade and economic and commercial. And I think for a country like Australia, you know, we want to keep all our options open and we want to keep all channels of trade and dialogue and commerce and diplomacy open. That's what serves an interest of a country like ours, not being forced to choose sides, not trying to choose sides, not trying to turn something into a contest that doesn't need to be a contest. I think too often commentators in this area try and make this a binary thing, like you're either with the United States or you're with China. You've got to choose one or the other. You're all in Team Blue or Team Red. No, I reject that proposition. I think anyone who has Australia's interests at heart would reject that proposition as well.
我认为您刚才已经其实总结了澳洲外交所面临的挑战。首先呢，澳洲不应该把这件事情视为必须做出边选的问题。我们不应该把这个看成一个二选一的问题。我们不需要选边站。事实上，最符合澳洲利益的情况是美中保持关系合作。那么紧张的局势呢受到了控制，同时呢各方也承认彼此之间确实是存在明显的分歧。但事实上呢，中国是我们所在地区乃至全球的重要大国，它并不会消失。美国呢，也是全球主要大国，并且在可预见的未来仍将如此。美国呢，也存在于西太平洋，以及我们所在的这一片地区，它也不会消失。确保这两个国家能够相处良好是符合澳洲利益的。对澳洲来说呢，我们与美国的安全关系显然是非常密切的，那我不认为这一点会改变。但同时呢，我们与中国也有互利的经济与贸易关系，双方呢都没有利益去伤害或破坏这一段的关系。我们也与日本、韩国、印尼以及其他国家在贸易、经济和商业方面保持了良好的关系。 我认为呢，对澳洲这样的国家而言，我们希望保持所有的选项，希望保持所有的贸易、对话、商业和外交渠道畅通，这才符合像澳洲这样的国家利益。我们不应被迫选边，不应主动的选边，也不应该把本来不一定需要成为竞争的事情变成竞争。在这一个领域，评论人士呢，常把事情描述成二元对立，好像你就是完全站在了美国这一边，要么站在中国一边，必须二选一。好像你不是完全的站在蓝队，就是完全站在红队。不，我拒绝这种说法。我认为任何真正的把澳洲利益放在心上的人都会应该拒绝这一种说法。
So beyond China and the United States, how do you see the importance will Southeast Asia, Asiana and the Pacific Island nation be to be the opportunity of Australia's long-term strategy future cooperating countries?
除了中国和美国之外呢，您又是如何看待东南亚、亚太地区以及太平洋岛国对澳洲长期战略的未来合作机会的重要性呢？除了中国和美国之外呢，您又是如何看待东南亚、亚太地区以及太平洋岛国对澳洲长期战略的未来合作机会的重要性呢？
So look, I think, I mean, firstly, look, Southeast Asia and the Southwest Pacific are, you know, Australia's nearest neighbours. They're in Southeast Asia in particular, they're very important economic and trading partners. And they're growing in importance, you know, in size and economic weight and importance in global supply chains. And, you know, we've invested a lot in recent years in, you know, our relationship with Vietnam, for instance, our relationship with Indonesia. We've always had, but have had an increasingly close relationship with Singapore, but also countries like the Philippines. You know, we're doing more and more with these countries than we used to. And I think that's important because in many respects we share a view. I mean, we were talking just before about US-China competition. Australia and Southeast Asia share a view that that competition needs to be kept within limits, and that we all, you know, Southeast Asian countries and Australia all have an interest in making sure we have healthy and productive relations with both China and the United States and not being forced to choose sides. The Southwest Pacific, it's a little different because it's much smaller countries with a lower level of development, and they have some unique challenges from, you know, low population, critical economic infrastructure, climate change. And we have a natural, I think, responsibility to those countries. You know, we are the largest sort of power in their area. We're the biggest provider of aid and development assistance. We are often, you know, the place that, you know, children will come, if they leave abroad, they'll come and study in Australia. We'll offer those countries a lot of scholarships. And I think that's important because a stable Southwest Pacific is important for Australia. I mean, you know, Papua New Guinea, there's only, at the closest point, there's only, you know, several kilometres of water separating the northern part of the Torres Strait in Australia and the islands that go across into the southern part of Papua New Guinea. So if those countries are not doing well, or if, you know, there's a global health pandemic outbreak or those countries have high poverty, Australia will feel the effects of that sort of failures of development. So, you know, we have an interest and also, I think, a moral responsibility to help support those countries as much as we can.
首先，东南亚和西南太平洋是澳洲最接近的邻近地区，其中东南亚尤其是非常重要的经济和贸易伙伴，他们的重要性正在上升，无论是在规模、经济的分量，还是在全球供应链中的地位。近年来，我们与越南的关系、与印尼的关系上投入了很多，我们也一直与新加坡保持关系，而且呢，这种关系越来越密切。同时呢，我们也与菲律宾等国家的合作也在增加。与过去相比呢，我们正在与这些国家开展越来越多的合作。我认为这很重要，因为在很多方面呢，我们有共同的看法。刚才我们谈到了美中的竞争，澳洲和东南亚国家都有一个共同的看法，就是在这种竞争需要被限制在一定的范围之内。东南亚国家和澳洲呢都有共同的利益，那就是确保我们能够同时与中国和美国保持健康而有成效的关系，而不是被迫的选边站。西南太平洋的情况则有些不同，因为那里有一些更规模更小、发展水平较低的国家组成。 这些国家呢面临了一些独特的挑战，那包括了人口较少、关键经济的基础设施不足，以及气候变化的问题。我认为澳洲呢对这些国家呢有一种自然的责任，我们是那个地区最大的力量，也就是最大的援助和发展援助提供者。对这些国家的孩子来说，如果他们出国留学，澳洲往往是他们选择前来学习的地方。我们也向这些国家提供很多奖学金，我认为这很重要，因为有一个稳定的西南太平洋对澳洲来说是非常重要的。那巴布亚新几内亚距离澳洲非常近，在最近的地方，澳洲的托雷斯海峡北部与通往巴布亚新几内亚南部的岛屿之间只有数公里的海域相隔。因此呢，如果这些国家发展不好，或者出现全球公共的卫生疫情，又或者是当地贫穷的程度很高，澳洲呢也会感受到这些发展的失败所带来的影响。所以我们不仅有现实利益，也有道德的责任，尽可能的支持这些国家。
Mm-hmm. So regarding to the current energy crisis, what do you think Australia playing, how should Australia playing a role to maintaining the stability across, across this crisis? Should we going more diversified with our risk in terms of like, extending our cooperation with the Indo-Pacific region with amid the growing geopolitical tensions?
谈到目前的能源危机，您认为澳洲应该如何发挥作用，以维持这场危机中的稳定呢？在地缘政治紧张的局势上升的背景下，澳洲是否应该透过扩大与印太地区合作，进一步的分散风险呢？
Look, I'd say two things. I think firstly, we were very poorly prepared for this crisis, but it was very foreseeable. So in the short term, we didn't warn Australians that this crisis was coming, even though we were closing our embassies and evacuating our diplomatic personnel. We didn't warn the Australian public that probably not a good time to travel to the region or anything. And as a result, we had a big scramble when the crisis erupted. You would have seen that people couldn't get out on flights and we had to scramble to put on charters. So I think we were poorly prepared. But in a broader sort of energy security sense, we were very, very poorly prepared. I mean, in the past decade in Australia, Australia's own production of liquid fuels has gone down considerably. We've had a number of refineries close. The last years of the coalition government, we rescued the last two refineries to make sure that they didn't close. But we also put in place a fuel security obligation, basically a requirement to hold a certain amount of domestic liquid fuels on shore. The Labor government's been in power for 4 years and hasn't touched any of those settings. We put in place the mechanism to start to improve and build our fuel security and our fuel resilience. They didn't do anything to improve that situation. And as a result now, I mean, Australia's one of the more vulnerable countries to the closure of the Strait of Hormuz than many others because we are very dependent upon imported liquid fuels. I would like to see Australia have a more diversified energy mix. I would like us to be less dependent on imported liquid fuels. And part of the answer to that is developing our own liquid fuels. 25 years ago, Australia was about 75% self-sufficient in liquid fuels, oil products. These days is about 20% self-sufficient. So I'd like us to see that. But also, I would also like to see us make sure that we also have alternative energy sources. So, electrification of trucking and transport and cars. But also, waste to energy type plants, methane capture facilities, biofuels. These are all areas where Australia could lessen our dependence if we invest in the technology and the supply chains, lessen our dependence on liquid fuels and make us more resilient as a country. And if you look at what other countries have done, I mean, China has massive stockpiles of liquid fuels. The United States has the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Japan has massive stockpiles. Korea has big stockpiles. Singapore has big stockpiles. We seem to be the only country who has thought it's fine to rely on, you know, global supply chains. And you know, bear in mind, the war in Iran didn't come overnight. I mean, we've had 2.5 years of war in the Middle East,
which has involved conflict with Iran throughout. We've had the Russia-Ukraine conflict now in its fifth year. So it's not as if the world looks as it did 10 years ago when major state conflict was almost, you know, unlikely and unforeseeable. The world's changed dramatically just in the last 4 or 5 years, but none of our settings have changed, and I think that's a problem.
我想说两点。第一，我认为我们对这一场的危机准备是非常不足的，但这场危机其实是可以预见的。短期来看，我们没有警告澳洲民众这一场危机即将到来，即使我们正在关闭使馆并撤离外交人员，我们也没有提醒澳洲的公众，现在可能不是前往该地区旅游的好时机。结果呢，当危机爆发时，我们陷入了相当仓促的应对。你可以看到，当时人们无法搭乘航班离开，我们不得不匆忙的安排包机。所以呢，我认为我们的准备是非常不充足的。但从更广泛的能源安全角度来看呢，我们同样的准备的是非常非常不足的。我的意思是，在过去的十年里，澳洲本土液体燃料产量是大幅度的下降。那我们已经有多家的炼油厂关闭，在联盟党政府的最后几年呢，事实上在联盟党或自由党政府的最后一年，我们挽救了最后两家的炼油厂，确保他们没有关闭。那同时呢，我们也建立了燃料安全义务，基本上是要求在澳洲的本土储备一定数量的液体燃料。那工党之政府呢，已经是执政了四年，但并没有对这些安排做出任何的调整。那我们当时建立了机制，开始改善和建设澳洲的燃料安全与燃料韧性，但他们并没有采取措施改善这一情况。那结果呢，澳洲如今是霍尔木兹海峡若被封锁时较其他许多国家更脆弱的国家之一，因为我们非常依赖进口的液体燃料。我们希望看到的是澳洲拥有更加多元化的能源结构，也希望我们在减少对进口液体燃料的依赖。其中一部分的解决方案是发展我们自己的液体燃料产能。在25年前，澳洲在液体燃料或相关产品大约有75%的自给率，如今呢，自给率大约只有20%，所以我希望呢，能看到这一点能够有改善。但同时呢，我们也希望能确保澳洲拥有可替代的能源来源，那例如呢，货运、交通运输和汽车的电气化，以及废物的转能源设施、甲烷补给设施和生物的燃料，这些都是澳洲可以发展的领域。如果我们投资相关技术和供应链，就可以减少对液体燃料的依赖，让澳洲作为一个国家更具有韧性。如果你看到其他国家的做法，中国拥有大量的液体燃料储备，美国拥有战略的石油储备，日本拥有大量的储备，那韩国也有大量储备，新加坡也有大量储备。我们似乎是唯一一个被认为依赖全球供应链就可以的国家。而且要记住，伊朗相关战事并不是一夜之间突然出现的，中东已经有2年半的战争，而其中一级是涉及到伊朗相关的冲突。俄乌冲击呢，也是如今进入了第5个年头，所以世界已经不像是10年前那样，当时大国之间的重大冲击呢，几乎是认为不太可能也难以预见的。仅仅在过去的4、5年里，世界已经是发生了巨大的变化，但澳洲的相关政策设定却没有改变，我认为这是一个问题。
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you for your sharing and your time. I think that's conclude our interview today. Thank you very much.
好的，非常感谢您的分享。今天的访问这里差不多结束了，谢谢您接受我们的访问。
Thanks so much, Sally.
Yeah, thank you very much.
非常感谢你 ，Sally， 谢谢。